Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Yeah, and a beautiful Shabbat it is. And, Dave reminded us from our Torah and Haftorah passages in particular that much of the goal of life is participating in the building of a better world, a better society, and we're God's junior partners in that endeavor. However, I want to suggest that along the way, we need encouragement. Do you need encouragement just in general? Yeah, I think we all do. Now, encouragement, assurance, sometimes reassurance. And there are things we don't want to be assured of. Would you want to know that the Patriots were absolutely going to win the Super Bowl tomorrow night? No. It would make it so boring, right? You don't need assurance about something like that, as trivial as that. But there are other areas of life that assurance and reassurance become real important. I want to illustrate the point from Fiddler on the Roof. Tevye says to Golda, his wife, "Golda, I've decided to give Petnik permission to become engaged to our daughter Huddle." "What? He's poor. He has nothing, absolutely nothing." "He's a good man, Golda. I like him. And what's more important, Huddle likes him. Huddle loves him. So what can we do? It's a new world, a new world. Love, Golda." "Golden, do you love me?" "Do I what?" "Do you love me? Do I love you? When our daughter's getting married and the trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go die down. Maybe it's indigestion." "Golda, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?" "You're a fool. I know. But do you love me?" "Do I love you? For 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love now?" "Golda, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared. I was shy. I was nervous. So was I. But my father and my mother said we'd learn to live each other. And now I'm asking, Golda, do you love me? It doesn't change a thing, but even so, after 25 years, it's nice to know." Okay? Assurance, reassurance, a very important thing. Now, sometimes things happen that are so tough that there's no assurance that could help. This is a quote of a Holocaust survivor. "Sometimes it's just too difficult." This is from a fellow named Jim Berkovitz. "Very often I think that the Lord could have chosen somebody else, that I think the Lord should choose somebody else for the next 2,000 years so that we can have a little bit of peace as Jews. I don't feel privileged just because I'm Jewish. I don't feel exceptional. I suffered a hell of a lot just because I'm Jewish." That sentiment of things being so tough and does God really care? For some people, no amount of reassurance can make difference. And it wasn't all that different than in Jeremiah's day. And this, I'd like to tie this to the last two verses of the Haftorah and the verses just preceding them, which we didn't read today. Because the situation in many ways was not all that different. This was the time of the Babylonian captivity, and it was a horrific experience in Israel's history. And so we read, "The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. Have you not noticed that these people are saying, The Lord has rejected the two kingdoms, that Israel and Judah, you know, the two separate kingdoms that he chose. So they despise my people and no longer regard them as a nation. So here what you have is a picture of people who were demoralized, and because of the horror of the captivity, Babylonian captivity, they were saying, this whole God thing, I just don't think it's true at all, you know. Of course, God responds in the verses that we did read this morning. This is what the Lord says. If I have not made my covenant with day and night and established the laws of heaven and earth, then I will reject the descendants of Jacob and David my servant, and will not choose one of his sons to rule over the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for I will restore their fortunes and have compassion on them. So what is God saying in this passage? He's saying that I have made a covenant with Israel that's as sure or more sure than the physical laws which govern the universe. You know, every day the sun comes up, it sets, the seasons, etc., etc. More sure than all of that is my covenant with Israel. Now, I want to talk with you about assurance this morning and reassurance. From a personal standpoint, and maybe some of you can identify with this, it was 1971 when I became a follower of Yeshua. So what? How many years is that? About 48 years, something like that? Right? And I want to tell you why it is that I have felt so sure, so confident, that my faith in him was not misplaced. And that's why I went the direction I did professionally, etc. I suppose it could be argued, well, Rich, maybe you just didn't feel you could make it as a musician, and that's why you became a religious professional. That's fair enough to ask that question, you know, or to imagine that. I don't think it's the case, though, to be quite honest. Irrespective of other career paths and whatnot, and what might have been, I'll tell you truthfully, I have felt that this faith that we have in this God of Israel and in Yeshua, the Messiah, really is true, and the reassurance is built into that sense that this is really true. Not that just that it works well, not that it's just a lubricant for navigating the difficulties of life in an easy way. No, that's not the bottom line. The bottom line has to do with truth. So let me talk with you about truth and about the world that we live in nowadays. I think there is a false assumption which is never discussed, but which is felt and which has been imbibed by many people in our society, and one which I would like to challenge very vigorously this morning, and that is, there is no assurance at all, no grounds for assurance about God's ways. There is no, absolutely nothing you can say of any kind of evidential nature, something that could say, this is what God is like, and I am going to follow him because this is what he has done. There's no facts you can appeal to. And I want to suggest to you that that's a wrong assumption. I want to suggest that that assumption results in an unnecessary and unwarranted, unjustified, and very unhelpful skepticism about the world that we live in. We live in a skeptical age, and we get the reasons why, all the advertising and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I want to suggest to you all, and this is very important for us at Ruach Israel, and very important for your life and my life, and for all Israel's life, that God has constructed us in such a way that we can learn things about the world that we live in, and though we will never know anything exhaustively, we can know things truly. We can know facts about what's out there. Doesn't mean that we'll ever understand God completely. We'll never understand his ways completely. We're going to be thrown curveballs every once in a while that you go, where did that come from? That's all part of the picture also. We get that. But at the end of the day, everybody, at the end of the day, Once we jettison, once we let go of, once we capitulate to the spirit of the times, which says you can't know anything. You can be moved emotionally, but you can't know anything. And I'm going to tell you that is a really destructive way to approach life and one which is unwarranted. And this morning, I want to offer you reassurance about that very basic thing and then some of the implications that flow. And this is a two-part message. I'm going to finish it next week. But I want to just get started with some of these things. We will never know anything exhaustively, totally, but we can know truth and we can live by it and luxuriate in that great fact and build our lives accordingly. So what are some of the facts? Well, there are so many facts. But what about some facts about Yeshua? Okay. Well, let me share a couple things that have meant a great deal to me over these several decades, and I hope to convince you they should mean something to you as well. First of all, I want to talk about his uniqueness. Now, I know that in the Jewish world, there is a tendency to embrace him, this new positive attitude toward Yeshua. And we're glad for it, but it is very limited in scope because the Yeshua that's embraced is remade into the image of really just another rabbi, a misunderstood first century rabbi. He was just a regular guy who just said some great things, but really when you get down to it, he was no different than any other rabbi fundamentally. And I want to suggest to you that Yeshua just doesn't give us that option. He is no ordinary rabbi. Oh, he's a rabbi, but he's so much more. Think about this. Think about the things that he said about himself. He just didn't go around teaching Torah. He said things like, before Abraham was, I am. Whoa. You know where we experience people who think that before Abraham I was, I am? Well, there is something called the Jerusalem syndrome. Have you ever heard of this before? The Jerusalem syndrome is it's a part of a mental hospital where they treat people with this affliction. There are people who come to Israel and because of the spiritual vibes or because of whatever it is in their own personality makeup, they imagine that they're Yeshua or they're Eliyahu or Moses. And I have this very funny image of a loudspeaker saying, "Will all the Eliyahus meet in room 206 for our session?" You know. And I just imagine at lunch, you know, I don't want to go on with it, but you get the idea. Yeshua's claims make him either really, really a troubled dude or possibly a liar. Maybe he was doing it because he wanted to gain a lot of followers. Or he's something else altogether. Now, on the first account, most people would say, and I think we could say it without any equivocation, that Yeshua was not a deeply troubled guy. As a matter of fact, the morality, the ethics he taught, the way he related to people with the psychological savvy that he manifested, this guy was very self-possessed. He was not out of his mind. And was he a liar? Well, he was the purveyor of the ethics which have really shaped the entire Western world. No people would have the chutzpah to say that the guy was a liar. Well, if he wasn't nuts, and if he wasn't a liar, then maybe the fact is, we're talking about facts, is that he really was a totally unique person. And I want to commend him to you as that totally unique person. He was really something special. He wasn't just some misunderstood first century rabbi. I mean, he went around saying things like, "Daughter, your sins are forgiven." Who says that? And he did it in his own authority. I mean, this is really amazing stuff. You just don't read about another guy like this. He is truly unique. And I mentioned Abraham rejoiced to see my day. He was much more than just another Honi the circle drawer, which is he's a traditional person in the ancient literature about a miracle worker. There were miracle workers in Israel, and there was no rain. And so Honi drew a circle in the dirt and stood in the middle of it and said, "I'm not leaving this circle until God grants rain." And there was rain. Okay, we could go with that. miracle worker? Sure, no problem. There are people with extraordinary gifts. That's cool. But Yeshua was a quantum leap beyond that. Yeshua spoke to the sea and it became calm. Yeshua did and said things that were just amazing. And Yeshua, the ultimate quintessential miracle, of course, his resurrection, which we'll talk about next week, is the best attested event in antiquity. We'll save some of that for next time. But he was far beyond any of anyone else, a different kind of guy. And I want to tell you that we're not in the realm of just supposition, religious sentimentality. Oh, you say those things because of the rabbi. That's what rabbis say. No, I'm sorry. I will not allow it. It is not true. It is not true. I'll tell you the truth. This guy is unique, and he is fantastic. And he is worth putting our hope and our trust in as Jews, because he is the son of David that Jeremiah prophesied would come make things right one day. And he will be back just to do that. Listen, today, Tevye and Golda have sung to us about how love needs reassurance, right? We all need God's reassurance that his promises are true. We all do. And in the days of the Babylonian exile, we needed God's reassurance that we would remain his unique covenanted people. A lot of people back then doubted it. What good is being Jewish? I mean, you know, it doesn't, if this is what we get. And Holocaust survivors sometimes feel this way. Sometimes the trauma of extreme suffering can rob us of the confidence in God's covenant, and attempts to seek reassurance just don't reach us. We talked about that. But when we embrace our ability to know facts, and this is critical, our ability to know facts, that you can know things, you can land on them, you can build your life on them, there are such a thing as facts that we can respond to. When we get that, when we look those facts right in the eye, the facts surrounding Yeshua, a surprising, breathtaking reality emerges. And I want you to come back next week, because I assure you, you won't be sorry. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, may the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.